This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and we have all kinds of things this hour. Someone wants to know, are they going to stop killing people because they don't look good after the last assassination? Someone wants me to elaborate on the CIA, deporting jihad, all that, so much more coming up in the second hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. And remember, of course, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So let's get to this one. The subject is Democrats' strategy change on violence. Jesse, after the dirty commies turned Charlie Kirk into a political martyr, do you think they'll adapt and try to make future attacks look less brazen and political, like an accident or a street crime? All right. His name is Seth. So I understand what you're saying. If, from a grand strategy standpoint, if you're one of these communists, you're looking at the Charlie Kirk assassination, and look, on top of everything else, it would be hard to take it as anything but a complete disaster for you. A complete disaster for you. There are Turning Point USA chapters sprouting up all over the country now by the thousands. They're fielding requests everywhere. Church pews are fuller than they've ever been. 20-25% increase in attendance. All it did was fill the right with resolve. It woke normies up. As far as power goes, political power goes, the assassination of Charlie Kirk was a complete disaster for the communists. 100 million people watched the memorial. It has been a disaster for them. So, logic states, maybe we shouldn't do that again. Maybe we should stop killing prominent people on the right, because it looks bad. Okay. Here's something we have to understand about elite communists versus street communists. As we've talked about many times before, two different divisions. You understand that there are elite communists, politicians, media people. They give out the orders. The street communists do it. The street communists, though, they're not, for the most part, the most put together people in the world. It's not as if these street animals are at home reading Marx and Engels and Gramsci and learning about communist theory, and they just have a different view on economics. That's not what most of these street groups are. It's the religion of what? What's communism the religion of? The malcontent. What these street animal groups are, like Antifa, are miserable, bitter, oftentimes drugged out, sexually deviant freaks. And they are angry and they are violent. And you think, or I shouldn't say you think, it would be easy to think that they came into a group like Antifa because they are communists and they want the communist revolution to move forward. Oftentimes, though, that is not the case. They come to these groups like Antifa because they are violent and they want to commit acts of violence. And this group gives them a cause, you know, though we aimed at something. But what this group does for them is it gives them an outlet for their bitterness and their anger. It allows them to hurt people. You could take that Antifa scumbag out of Antifa. He is still going to be a violent person, and that violence is going to be channeled towards somewhere. What I'm saying is, even if you are, I mean, look, pick, I don't even know who you would pick as the political head of the Democrat Party at this time. So I'll just use the placeholder like Gavin Newsom, right? He's just a placeholder. I don't think he's calling any shots, but we'll use Gavin Newsom. If you are Gavin Newsom and you are politically savvy, and he is, and you look at the assassination, and yeah, you don't care about it, but you understand that it probably doesn't help your presidential chances to have the street animals who believe what you believe killing people. And let's say you want it to stop. Let's say you even through various channels get word down of, hey guys, could you stop murdering people, please? It would be great for my presidential campaign if you didn't murder people. even if he's tried to put the word out there like that, well, you can't stop a killer. They are there so they can commit acts of violence. I want to encourage you, if you haven't, and you probably have already seen this before, have you ever looked at those group mug shots at times when Antifa gets arrested? They'll arrest 5 or 6 of them. Have you ever seen them? There's all kinds of, if you look, you can go look it up right now on the internet as long as you're not driving and look at them. I'm not even going to specify one because I don't have to specify one. Go look up a group mug shot where the masks are off, the black clothing is off, and look at those freaks. Do you think if orders come down from Gavin Newsom, hey, could you calm down? Do you think those freaks are going to set aside violence? They're there for the violence. That's the whole point. I have talked about the street animals, the street communists in this country many times before, as they are Frankenstein's monster. The Democrat Party, the communists in the media who are with them, they are obviously the ones who helped create that monster with the endless Nazi, 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 endless rhetoric like that, ginning these people up, getting them revved up. But something happened along the way. Now, elite communists have a great deal of fear of the street communists because the street communists are savages. They are violent animals. Chuck Schumer's actually a great example of this. Chuck Schumer's always been a scumbag, and he's a total lizard person who doesn't believe in anything. I got all that. But Chuck Schumer's rhetoric in the last 10 years, I would say, Chuck Schumer's rhetoric has sounded less like a standard Democrat and more like AOC, more like Jasmine Crockett. Why? Did Chuck Schumer go to the left? This guy doesn't believe in anything, not left, right, or anything. He believes in being a powerful senator. That's what he believes in. So why does he talk like that now? Why get up and give speeches talking about reaping the whirlwind? And why does he speak like that now? He has to. He doesn't have a choice. If he doesn't, AOC is going to primary him, and the animals who make up the Democrat base are going to choose her over him because she will get up and loudly proclaim, we need to end capitalism, and all Republicans are Nazis. And she will get up and say all the things he is unwilling to say, so he has to be willing to say it. This has had an effect where now the most vile, violent people demand this stuff. Why do you think Democrat members of Congress and wannabe members of Congress across the country are showing up at ICE facilities and loudly protesting and in some cases assaulting ICE agents? Remember, what's her name? Shriver? LaMonica? I forget her name. That one congresswoman who assaulted an ICE agent on camera. Why are they all doing this? Are they all really angry about deportations? Are they all really that committed to it? No, that's how you get elected in the Democrat Party. Yeah, I may get arrested. Shoot, I may even be looking at a charge. But how good do I look for the animals who vote for me? I'm the Democrat congressman who showed up at the ICE facility and I assaulted one. Vote for me. That's how truly demonic and deranged the party has become. This was a long way of saying, I do not believe the assassinations will stop because I do not believe the street animals can be controlled. Now, you've been giving them orders for 10 years. For 10, 15 years, you've been telling them that this is the end of the world. We're up against Nazis. We're up against Nazis. Are you strike ready? Are you street ready? What's your risk tolerance? Remember that Jay Appel cut I've played over and over and over again on the show? We've got to be strike ready. We've got to be ready. We've got to be ready. It's Nazis. The situation is dire. Nazis, it's dire. Nazis, it's dire. Oh, you have it? Go ahead, Chris. How do you walk this back?
We might call this getting strike ready. I think of it as getting us strike ready or street ready. And part of that is understanding our own strength. And as we develop that strength, being able to assess our risk tolerance, because we know that risk tolerance increases as the severity of the situation increases and as our own understanding of what's happening increases. So overall, the more we understand what's effective, what the risks are, and who's ready to participate, the more impact we can have.
Can she step up to the podium now after rhetoric like that, endless rhetoric like that, and say, hey, guys, let's dial it down, huh? Hey, hold on. We don't have to gather outside of an ICE facility that makes us look bad. She can't do that. The animals have been let loose. You can't pull them back in now. We'll see where we're going. All right. Let's talk about the CIA. Let's talk about deporting jihad. Man, what a show tonight. Before we talk about that, let's talk about saving you a little bit of money. Pure Talk saves you a lot of money. Did you know the average family, when they switch to Pure Talk, saves over $1,000 a year? I talk about Pure Talk all the time because it's the patriotic mobile company, unlike Verizon, unlike AT&T, unlike T-Mobile. But how about saving you a fortune? $1,000 a year is real money. If you pick up your phone right now and you dial #250 and you say Jesse Kelly, you will find yourself speaking to a pleasant American who speaks English, and they will get you switched over. It's 10 minutes. 10 minutes on the phone. It's not a huge pain. You don't have to stress it. You can wave goodbye to your dirtball commie cell phone company and go be part of Pure Talk. I'm proud to be part of Pure Talk. By the way, you switch now, you save an additional 50% off your first month. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Before I get back to the questions, I have to say something wonderful that happened to me today. Not surprising, but wonderful. Somebody on the internet said I was ex-CIA. Don't shake your head, Chris. Now, of course, that's not true, but I could understand why he'd think that. I'm a very covert person. I've always been able to, even with my incredible height, I've always been able to just kind of blend into a crowd. I have a way, this special ability to kind of move with the crowd in a way that makes me disappear. I walk very lightly, almost like a ninja. I walk extremely lightly. Don't say anything, Chris. I've always felt that I would have been, as you know, an excellent, excellent secret agent. The Kremlin, I could get in. North Korea, I'd fit right in. You want me to go to China? Who's going to suspect me? And if people say you can't hide, I hide in plain sight. I pretend as if I'm not one. That's part of the secret of being a secret agent. So while I was never CIA, for people who suspect I was, I get it. I do. Oh, tall, beardly Oracle. How can you say something like the CIA has never been good and not elaborate? Can you please explain? This has been gnawing at me since you said that. P.S., I celebrated my anniversary with Pure Talk. Ah, how about that? Not only am I saving a lot of money, I have better service. Thank you for the recommendation. All right, so CIA. First of all, let's remember how this began. In World War II, we knew we needed an intelligence network. You have to have a network of people gathering intelligence. And pause before we actually do that at all. Intelligence networks, spy agencies, it doesn't matter which one it is, right? All around the world, it doesn't matter. Their job, we like to think of spies as James Bond, you know, you go down and play poker, and then you have a car that shoots missiles, but that's actually not supposed to be what intelligence agents do. Traditionally, historically, even before the modern era, you gather intelligence. You are eyes and ears, and when appropriate, when necessary, do things like sabotage, maybe help create political divides in a place. These are the traditional roles of intelligence agencies. This is what they do. However, there is something else that is true. Yeah, that's exactly right, Chris. Real life spy stuff seems boring, Chris says. But okay, so you remember I told you my story about how they attempted to recruit me into military intelligence when I was my 4 years in the Marine Corps was about to be up. And they invited me down and they showed me their intelligence room and things like that. And as you can imagine, I'm an idiot. So I'm asking questions about exploding pens and stuff like that. And I want to know spy stuff. And they were very, very frank. And they flat out told me, actually, it's pretty boring. We just kind of type up reports and things like that. Real life spy stuff, intelligence stuff is generally boring. But like I was just saying, there is something that happens historically with intelligence agencies, and this happens a lot. The agency itself is made up of spies. They have information other people do not have, and they operate out of necessity in secret. The spy agency, whatever one we're talking about, they can't take out an ad in the paper and talk about what they just did. It's secret. They have information other people don't have. They also traditionally have access to arms if they need them. They end up growing in power, and they oftentimes end up more powerful than the government itself or an actual threat to the government itself. This is consistent throughout time. Because of what they do, they gain insane amounts of power. Now, rewinding back to what we were discussing, in World War II, we had to develop something called the OSS. The OSS, Office of Strategic Services, I believe it was called. OSS. It was the CIA before there was a CIA. They did exactly what you think they did. They gathered all the intelligence they could, did all the secret spy stuff they possibly could to help us win World War II. Boom, World War II ends. We immediately, honestly, not even immediately, before World War II even officially ended, we understood that the Soviet Union was going to be a problem. They were going to be a problem. The Soviet Union, they were aggressively communist. They were spreading as fast as they could spread. It was an evil, evil, evil regime that slaughtered its own people, killed people en masse. And we understood they had a top-notch intelligence agency. And let's pause before we continue on the CIA. This is very common with communist regimes. They generally do intelligence spy stuff better than free countries do. And that's interesting when you think about it. Very consistent, that's the case. Why? Why are communists better spies than normal people? We'll talk about that. Then we'll talk about CIA, a little bit of the history of it, and then we'll move on and do other stuff. Hang on.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so?
Yeah. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Friday. Remember, you can email us, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We're actually talking a little bit about CIA, history of intelligence agencies, before I get back to the CIA. Why are communists traditionally better at spying than people on the right? Why? Well, it's a couple different things. One, they're religiously committed to it. That's a big thing. It's a very, very big thing. Remember, it's a religion for them. But two, and this really comes into play, what have we always talked about when it comes to communists and lying? Lying is a necessity with spying. That rhymed, Chris. Did you see that? What? That lying is a necessity with spying. For communists, that's second nature. That's required of them. You lie. You lie all the time. They're naturals at it. All right, back to the CIA, though. After World War II, we had an OSS. They knew the Soviet Union was going to be a problem. They knew they had to create a counter-spy agency, our government did, or I should say they thought they did, and they probably did. They came up with, obviously, Central Intelligence Agency. Now, William Donovan is the man who was running the OSS in World War II, and he's really the one who created the CIA, or was in charge of creating the CIA. And there's a great quote, and I've never been able to verify if this quote was actually his, but there's a great quote from him in the movie The Good Shepherd. It's a movie about kind of essentially the creation of the CIA. I love that movie. Everyone else who ever watched it hated it, but I thought it was wonderful. And there is a lot of factual stuff in it. And he has this great quote when he's talking about creating the Central Intelligence Agency. He said, "I'm very worried. I want this to be America's eyes and ears, not its heart and soul." He's a man who understood intelligence agencies can very, very quickly get way, way out of control. Now you have the Central Intelligence Agency, and they're going up against the Soviet Union, and they're spying, and they're counter-spying, and they're doing things like this. They tried to pull off things like the Bay of Pigs, where we recruited Cuban expats and we trained them here in America and other places, and then we sent them in without support, and the whole thing was an embarrassing disaster. And the CIA started working with the American mafia, trying to figure out how to take out Fidel Castro, and doing all kinds of things done in the dark, in secret. When I said, I'm not sure, I never said they were always bad. When I said, I'm not sure the CIA has ever been good, that was probably an overstatement, but it is an organization that is the largest, most powerful spy agency in the world. They do operate in the shadows, and we now know they have participated, just like the FBI, in communist politics. Have you ever heard of, I'll leave you with this and we'll move on. You've heard of Operation Gladio, right? You know what that was? I'm actually tempted to do a history episode on it at some point in time in more depth, but we saw the Soviet Union expanding across Europe, across the world, really, and we wanted more subtle ways to counter it. How did we do this? Well, we used a variety of different means, but one of the ways we did this was we had the Central Intelligence Agency. We had them fund and train violent right-wing street groups in countries where the Soviet Union was gaining influence. These right-wing street groups would beat people up, vandalize things. They would do things essentially Antifa is doing in America today, only Antifa is a left-wing group. My buddy Mike Benz talks about this all the time, and Mike Benz, who knows more about this stuff than a lot of people, Mike Benz is extremely suspicious that Antifa is a continuation of Operation Gladio, only for the other side. We know that all this information has come out about Operation Gladio. We know that's what the CIA was doing. As far as the funding the right-wing groups and right-wing violence in different countries, we know all that. We know that. Are they involved with Antifa? I don't know. It's an organization not to be trusted by any means. Not saying at all everything they've ever done is bad or anything like that, but I'm not sure it's an organization that's on the up and up, and that's putting it mildly. Color me skeptical. Hey, Jesse. Why don't we actively deport individuals who continuously promote jihad, including politicians? Isn't this insurrection speech? It is insurrection speech, but we have a useless, pathetic, weak organization. It's known as the Republican Party. And the Republican Party, they'll run right up to the point where they can actually do something about what's happening in the country, and then they will famously wuss out like always. It is beyond belief to me that we have a town in the United States of America, Dearborn, Michigan, that has the Muslim call to prayer multiple times a day. And people who don't understand America's history, they will tell you to their blue in the face that, well, it's freedom of religion. That's not at all what the founders were talking about when it comes to freedom of religion. They were not talking about allowing a foreign religion to come conquer an American city and run everyone else out. That is crazy talk. But you can't get Republicans to be bold and speak like that. So we're stuck with what we're stuck with here. Hey, Jesse, I'm 12. I love the show. I'm wondering what I can do to not let the communists take over our beautiful country. Says I can say his name. His name is Talon. Well, Talon, I appreciate you very much. I appreciate that spirit you have. Have you looked into possibly creating a group in your school? Maybe even a TPUSA group? I'll tell you, teenagers in my kids' school are creating it right now. There are all kinds of things you can do with your friends, with people you know, to help get this country back on the right track. So maybe look into that. And remember something, Talon. Growing up, learning, remember you're going to have to educate yourself on things, learning about the capitalism and the Constitution and America's founding, learning all these things is a critical part of your role if you want to be involved. You're going to have to be knowledgeable and get married and start a family when you grow up. The best anti-communism there is a man marrying a woman, making babies, and raising them right. The nuclear family unit is the greatest threat to communism in every country where it's ever taken root, and the communists know it. That's why they have attacked the American family without end in this country. They understand their great threat are nuclear families staying together, raising solid human beings. You take a child raised in a solid nuclear family with solid values, the chances that child is going to end up as a recruit in the Communist Party are low. Not impossible, but low. You take some child who's a complete disaster, drugged out parents, messy childhood, a child who's mixed up, that child is a prime recruit for the communists. Grow up, gain knowledge, be an activist when you're young. You don't have to wait till you're older. Find yourself a dime when you're old enough. You're 12 years old now. Find yourself a dime who loves you, supports you, put a ring on her finger, and make some babies with her. After you're married, make some babies with her. All right? All right. Jesse, I enjoy listening to your show. Medal of Honor Monday's great. Keep up the good work. I have a question regarding the Rear Admiral. He's talking about Buttigieg. The scuttlebutt is his relocation to Michigan a couple years ago was to make him a Michigan resident and hence eligible to run for Michigan governor. He has recently been seen on TV sporting a full beard. My question to you is, do you think his recent hair growth is due to chalk? No, unless he's divorced his husband, he's not taking any chalk. I want you to take chalk, though. I want you to have a testosterone boost. I want you to have more energy. I want your mind to work better. I want your mood to be better. I'm telling you, the mood thing is real. You might not think about it because it's just your T levels dropping because of the estrogen in the water is something that happens slowly over time. You don't realize how down you are too often until you get your T levels jacked back up. Have a smile back on your face. Be better at work. Be better at home. Be better in every way with the male vitality stack from Chalk. Chalk.com, chalk.com/Jesse saves you a pile of money. Go. We'll be back.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Friday. Remember, you can download the show if you miss any part of it. Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. Bracket Buster Bronco. Oh, by the way, as you can tell, there's no crappiest country in the world tournament today. We don't do them on Fridays. It'll return on Monday. Hey, Chris, who is it on Monday? Who's the bracket on Monday? Who's it between? There's no one on Monday? Oh, there's none on Monday either. It's Tuesday, Thursday. Monday is India and somebody. I forget who it was. Well, it doesn't matter. There's none on Monday. There's one on Tuesday. I'll let you know who it is whenever I figure it out. Bracket Buster Bronco. Is it just me or does it feel like the left is pulling out all the stops at the buzzer? Feels like a boxing match. They've been dominated for 8 rounds. Now they're at the point they're biting off ears, taking cheap shots, so on and so forth. In your opinion, can they see the writing on the wall, or do they really think they are winning this fight? It's been a while since we heard the Frito Bandito. I'm beginning to think he got deported. No, he's here.
Ay, 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 ay. I am the Frito Bandito. I like Fritos corn chips. I love them, I do. I want Fritos corn chips. I'll get them from you. Oh, I am the Frito Bandito. Give me Fritos corn chips and I'll be your friend. The Frito Bandito, you must not offend. Munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos.
All right, so yes, they are desperate. There's no question about that. They are desperate. They had reached, just think about this. It's not very long ago, they had reached peak political power everywhere. They owned it all. Corporate world, media, FBI, White House, they had everything. Now they're looking around and they're watching it come apart on them. They're not popular. The party's not popular. It went bad on them really quickly. So that's a problem. Okay. That's a problem for them. So yes, they are desperate. That's an aspect to it. Another aspect to it is, remember, is when it comes to the ICE stuff, shooting at ICE agents, blocking ICE facilities, as we've talked about many times before, illegal immigration is not one of many communist issues, Democrat issues. It's not just thrown in the big bowl of other things they love, like abortion and high taxes. It is their everything. It's why they're doing it in every single globalist communist country with mass migration, the mass immigration of foreigners. They cannot possibly lose because they will bring in enough of an army to vote you out, to outnumber you. They cannot possibly lose. Without the mass migration of foreigners, they cannot possibly win. They are not popular. It is their everything. So that is part of why you're seeing the ICE stuff. Okay, now let that aside. You use the power you have. Communists have always believed that. If they have everything, they'll use everything. If they take over everything, the presidency, House, Senate, they'll simply use those things, pass the laws they want, send the FBI after people again. That's what they do. If you don't have those things, and they don't have the White House, they don't have the House, they don't have the Senate, they don't have public popularity, what do they have, though? The only thing they have are violent groups of street animals who want to hurt people. So if that's what you've got, in their minds, that's what you use. Is there a desperation to it? Of course. But there's also a, what other choice do we have? Here, Dr. Big Hands. My dad and I generally agree on political issues, but he and I have wildly different understanding of the stakes we're currently facing as a country. You could say he's not been Jesse-pilled like I have. He does not share my desire to act quickly against those who must be indicted. He does not share my desire to infiltrate Antifa and arrest every member. And he thinks if Trump just does these things that the media will portray him negatively and Republicans will lose in the midterms. He has repeated the line, stay the course, it's working, even as leftist militants have assassinated Kirk and shot up an ICE facility and terrorized an ABC affiliate. How can I convince my dad that he is dead wrong, that speed is essential, that ruthless action against those who want us dead is needed now, and that the liberal media is no excuse for inaction? Thank you for everything you do. It says not to say his name, and I won't. Okay, so I don't know that you have to convince him. I don't know that you have to. Remember, there are always going to be a large quantity of bystanders in our little cultural war we're having in any country, but definitely the one we're having in this one. There are going to be people who are 10 miles behind you. They don't understand what you understand. It doesn't mean they're stupid. It doesn't mean they're bad people. And it also doesn't mean you have to bring them all up to speed, because that's not humanly possible. Older people, and this is not universal, believe me, there are some 90-year-olds who listen to this show who are more hardcore than I am, but in general, the older you are, the less likely you are to be able to accept where we are as a country, because you lived most of your life and it wasn't like that. There were years and years and years. If you look at most of the 20th century, if you look at the 1900s, there are, I'll be honest with you, there were all kinds of Democrats I could have voted for in the past. I'm not saying I would have been a Democrat. It's not like they were ever on the right, but all kinds of Democrats were relatively normal human beings, Southern Democrats, people with values, not these communist animals. So if you're, let's say you're 80 years old, for most of your life, maybe even if you were a Republican most of your life, Democrats aren't evil. Oh, we disagree on things like unions and stuff like that, but not evil. That's a good point, Chris. We've brought this up before. Go watch JFK's speeches. Listen to how that man spoke about America, how much he loved it, how much he talked about its greatness. There's not a single elected Democrat in the United States of America who talks like that anymore because it's the anti-American party. But it's hard, very, very hard, if things have always been a certain way, to accept that they've changed. If you've loved Reese's peanut butter cups your entire life, that's been your go-to candy your whole life, Reese's peanut butter cups, over and over and over and over and over again. And Reese's changes the recipe, and now they don't taste as good anymore. If you've been eating Reese's peanut butter cups for 60 years, even if your tongue is telling you it tastes different, your mind probably won't be able to accept it. That's how it goes. All right. We still have an hour. Let's have fun in this hour. Before we have this hour, speaking of your father, your grandfather, grandmother, have you taken the time with Legacy Box yet? And I'm not telling you to go rip up your baby book yet and take all those pictures out. I'm not telling you to start taking picture frames off the wall yet. Take the first step and get the box. Get a hold of Legacy Box. They will send you a box. Once you get the box, then you can slowly, at your pace, there's no time limit, at your pace, fill up that box with your hard copy pictures, your photo negatives, your VHS tapes, your Super 8 film. Slowly but surely, fill up the box. Then you send it in. They hand digitize everything in Tennessee. And they send you the box back. Let Legacy Box preserve your memories forever. I've said it before. It's nice. I like having it for me. I didn't do it for me. I did it for my children's children and their children after them. So they can see pictures of my dad. So they can watch our home movies. So they can look at Aubrey's gymnastics tapes. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. We'll be back.